you hear me, gentlemen?
Yes.
Good. Okay. Brett, let's go back to you now. That was a very vivid thing. What did the other gentleman in the cockpit have to say about this? Did you point that out, or did you just take pictures and be quiet?
No, I just, I've learned, I've just learned, you know. I don't think I shared it with the person I was sitting next to. I just snapped a couple of quick pictures while we were turning and left it, you know.
Got it. Yeah, better off. Yeah. I understand. Yeah, especially you might have left the intercom open. You don't want to do that. Okay.
Well, you know, I mean, every once in a while, we would have sightings, you know, and I did share with people.
This is important. Tell me, you actually spoke to the passengers?
Oh, not the passengers, just the person I'm flying with.
Okay. Well, give us one example.
Well, since I saw you or talked to you last a few years back, we were sitting in, we were in Lexington, early AM departure, filled up the airplane, pushed off the gate, had an ATC, we had a little bit of a hold before we could launch. So we're sitting out there, the tower's closed, and we're just waiting for an ATC release, and
if the tower is closed, where's the ATC that's releasing you?
Well, ATC is still controls the airspace above the airport, so we just communicate with the approach control facility or the center facility.
Okay.
And get a release that way, yeah, and then they release us, yeah.
Got it.
This particular departure was tricky because the departure time was like 15 minutes before the tower opened, and you know, it was always one of those things, should we just wait for the tower and get the clearance? But anyway, we were sitting out there waiting, and pretty night out, and I'm just up big windows in the flight deck, so I was just looking at the stars, and then I realized a ship was flying right over the top of the airport. This particular type of ship has an amber hue to it, which my brother and I have seen numerous ships like this over the years. But anyway, this one, it looks like an amber disc. And I would say it was pretty low, you know, 2,000-3,000 feet. I didn't say anything. I was flying with a female first officer, and I just bumped her on the shoulder, and I pointed up, and she leaned forward and looked at that and just watched it, and she never said a word about it. And I left it alone. I thought, I'm going to see how long, you know, she's going to go without talking about this. So we departed, and later on that day, you know, I said, so what did you think, you know, that light that I pointed out to you this morning? And she turned to me, and her eyes got really big, and she said, I've never seen anything like that before. We didn't talk a lot about it, but
it was clearly clearly a disc.
Yeah, well, you know, it's, you can't really tell for sure if it's a disc, but it's round.
Got it.
It's
sure.
Round from the vantage point we're looking at, so
gotcha.
I'm guessing, you know, frequently these are, the amber bottoms, I think, has to do with their anti-grav system. It creates an amber hue.
Plasma-like, whatever.
I think Area 51, this has been observed with some of those ships that they fly out there. And,
that's,
you know,
a good
we've
story.
Seen numerous ships like that.
That's
yeah,
a
that
good
was,
one.
So that was
you,
cool.
Look, you and Mark clearly are, you've been picked, selected. These are too many. I don't know the one-tenth of what you've got in that book or what's coming. You guys have seen things that suggest to me that you have been watched. That's said in the best sense of the word. You're watched. You're just, you're on their agenda, and you're watched or communicated with. And leave him doesn't get any more direct than that. Leave him. He's just leaving.
Yeah.
So that's wild. Okay, let's go back to Mark. Mark, it's your turn.
Yes, I am here.
What's up next with you? Let's tell another story.
As I've been listening, I realize there's so much to talk about. You mentioned something about early childhood recollections, and I actually have, it's in my book, but I have several recollections of things happening when I was very young. and they're amongst the clearest memories I have. Nobody else in the family remembers. I've talked to my mom and my dad and my brother, and nobody really remembers these things but me. I think my brother said he has a vague recollection of one of the events, but I'll just describe one of them.
Oh, sure.
We used to, when I was about 4.5 years old when this took place, and so my brother was like 2 or something, you know, so his recollection is not there as much as mine. But we used to take trips, you know, road trips and stuff all the time. Uh-huh. And in my memory, we were driving, my dad and my mom were in the front seat, and Brett and I were in the back seat, and we were driving in what I recall looks like Eastern Washington, you know, through the, like if you're going to, from Seattle to Spokane, you've got the desert type areas. And it was nighttime in my recollection, and I was looking out the side window out across the desert, and I saw an orange orb, off in the distance, and I just kept watching it. And as we were driving, the orb got closer and closer to us, and to the point where I could see my parents were alarmed. My dad was like, kind of gripping the steering wheel and my mom commented on it, and my dad said to her, "Don't look at it, honey." And this orb came right behind our car. I'd say it was maybe 15 feet in diameter, roughly.
It looped around behind the car.
Yeah, and we were still driving. Dad was gripping the wheel, and he was kind of hunched over the wheel, and I remember him sweating and looking kind of terrified.
You're what, time of night?
It was dark out, so I really,
okay.
4.5 years old, I don't remember.
Evening, all right, evening. And
evening. Yeah,
I assume you're on a two-lane highway in the desert?
Yes, it seems that way to me. It seems like that
two-lane. Yeah.
And there was no other cars around.
Yeah. And you're so 4.5, and this thing comes down, and your dad says to your mom, you remember this, "Don't look at it. Don't look at it.
Don't look at it, honey."
And then
he kind of hunches forward and grips the wheel and looks straight ahead, and he just keeps driving, you know.
It came toward you, it looped around behind you, and was, I assume, following you.
Yes, it seemed to be following us.
And you look out the back window at 4.5 years of age. Brett, and what do you think?
Or
Mark, what
both,
do you, yeah, what are you thinking,
yeah,
Mark?
Brett and I both sat on our knees and kind of were perched up looking out the back window at it.
Uh-huh.
And
it's just tracking you.
Yeah, and I don't remember being afraid, but I remember being full of wonder. And I remember my brother looking at my parents to see what kind of reaction he should have, you know, like whether he should be scared or whether he should not be scared. Or he was kind of looking at them to see what they were doing. And
told your mom, "Don't look at it." That's a very interesting thing.
Yeah, he said, "Don't look at it, honey." And
yeah, I got that. That's wild. Now that suggests that he knew there might be.
He knew there was something unusual.
He didn't want her to freak out. Yeah.
No, and he was actually more freaked out than she was, you know.
Sounds like it.
Yeah.
And it also suggests that, I mean, when I hear you talk, I hear that Dad might have had something earlier in his life, too.
You know, that's interesting. I never could get that out of him. I have asked him before.
Mm-hmm. Does he just avoid the question?
Something he always felt. He always got a curious look on his face, and he would kind of just not go there.
Well, there's your answer.
So I don't know.
Yeah, no,
yeah,
that's,
I don't know for sure.
Well, that's a pretty good bet that he did, I would say. I'd take those odds. Okay. Now, so this thing is, this beautiful amber orb is behind your car.
It was orange. Like
orange, all right.
Orange.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it solid in its orange color? Or do you remember any striations or variations?
Featureless. Yeah, no features of any kind on it, and no variations, just a solid orange, and it was a spherical, and the way I remember it, it's probably between 10 and 15 feet in diameter.
Well, it must have been 30 feet or less behind your car.
Yeah, it was very close behind our car and following us, as my dad seemed to be possibly speeding down the highway. He was
possibly, yes.
I think he stepped on the gas a little bit.
Did mom turn around and look? Do you remember? What did they say?
No, she didn't. She just kind of sat there looking straight ahead.
Uh-huh.
And my next memory was this. I don't know what this thing did or didn't do. My next memory is we were driving down the highway. The object was gone, and Dad and Mom looked like they were just sort of in a trance. They were just Dad was driving straight ahead, and Mom was looking straight ahead, and I was looking at my brother. And nobody seems to have remembered that experience.
Nobody was talking,
and we just drove on in silence. And that
sounds like one of those 1950s sci-fi movies.
Well, you
it
know,
really
it
does.
I think so too. It reminds me a lot of that kind of experience. But it's always been a very vivid memory. And over the years, I've occasionally asked Dad and Mom about if they remembered that. And I think Brett says he says it sounds familiar to him. You know, I don't know if he has a clear memory of that or not, but I think he indicated that it sounds familiar to him.
Brett, anything come to mind?
Yeah, the part of looking out the back window, it's really strange, but I have a memory of that, and maybe some of the anxiousness that was being transmitted from my father.
Uh-huh.
When Mark talks about this, I vaguely remember that, but as far as the rest of it, I really don't. I mean, I would have been, you know, I would have been pretty little.
Yeah. Okay. Well, not too little to have something like that escape your notice. It obviously impressed
right.
on you. It would have to. That's awfully
yeah.
darn vivid. Very good. Oh. Very good. Go ahead, Mark.
Jeff. I'm sort of, my mind's kind of jumping all over the place, but I thought I'd mention this while it's on my mind.
Mm-hmm.
The little picture I have here of the what looks like it might be a gray or something like a gray.
Right.
Do you notice, let me just pull it up here. Okay. Yeah, when you look at it, do you notice how narrow the palm is?
Sure do.
Compared to a human palm?
Yeah.
Well, that's significant to me because somewhat later, possibly a year later or so, maybe 2 years later, I'm not sure. I'm really bad at time, but... I got two prints, palm prints on my bedroom window in Seattle where I lived at the time. And one palm print had a narrow palm just like this, three fingers, but the three fingers were straight, not bent like these, and they were all of equal length.
You're
like
kidding.
Three-fingered palm print with a narrow palm just like this one.
On the outside of the glass...
No, the inside of the glass.
Oh my!
Yeah, the inside of the glass, and the print. And so naturally, I tried to get photographs of it, and it's very hard to get a photograph
right.
off a window, as it turns out. But I did get one that's good enough to see it, you know. And then I measured my palm against it, and from the from my wrist, the bottom of my palm.
Mm-hmm.
To the top of my middle finger is 7 1/4 inches, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have really big hands.
Okay.
But, and so I measured this print, and this print was 5 and some inches in length, so it was considerably smaller than my hand, and I don't have real big hands, so.
You said there were two prints?
Yes, the second print I got later, and it was a human-like print. I mean, it had 5 fingers and a thumb.
Uh-huh.
And one of the fingers was very bent, and that print was also smaller than my hand, and my hand again is not very big. So
that is fascinating. I'm thinking, was that a message just to let you know that?
Yeah,
yeah, it was a kind of like a greeting, so to speak.
Yeah, it was like we were here type thing. You know,
that's right.
And
that's how I'd see it.
And of course, if you want, that leads into my next big experience. I guess my biggest experience.
All right, let's go. Yeah.
Yeah, that this took place in the same apartment in Seattle. And I think it took place a year, possibly even 2 years after the October 98 incident.
Okay.
But Brett says that it took place, they took place closer together. His recollection of when I told him about it was that it was more likely in maybe 1999.
Brett, and, real quick, Brett, were you around to see this handprint, or were you off flying and doing things?
No, I wasn't around, but Mark photographed it and sent it to me, and then you know, we also had experiences where they put their fingerprints on his computer screens while we were sitting there looking at the computer. So we've had numerous fingerprint experiences over the years.
Yeah.
You know, a number of them. Yeah.
Right while you're watching the screen?
Don't see it until you shut the monitor off.
I gotcha. Is it kind of like, okay, let me try and do something here. Is it kind of like a handprint in the dust, or is it an oily handprint, or is it a combination?
Can I answer that? They tend to be most of the ones I've gotten on my computer screen and window tend to be greasy and considerably oilier than my own prints when I put them on there. I've also had what looked like watery prints that were more like dried water, kind of a liquidy residue. The handprints that I got on my bedroom window were thick and oily.
How interesting. Okay.
Yeah,
right.
And I don't know what that means, but
I don't know anyone with thick and oily hands.
No, I mean this would be, you know, it's odd.
Very odd. All right, I go back to my original premise, and that's that somehow you, and I would suggest that at least part of your family, has been involved with this without knowing, or potentially your dad knew, for a long time, multi-generationally, perhaps.
I think that's very possible. I certainly know it's not any kind of coincidence. You know, there's certainly
No. You've been picked. You guys were selected. It's not over either. You've got a lot of time left, so there'll be more, I think.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Let's roll out this big story then.
Yeah, my big story. This is my big story for a couple of reasons, but probably in 1999 or 2000, in that same apartment, my mom was visiting me from Spokane, so she was staying overnight.
Mm-hmm.
And it was probably, I don't know, maybe 12 o'clock in the evening when we went to bed. So she slept in the living room. I had a very small apartment. It was a living room. She was sleeping in there, but she had her reading light on, and she was reading mm-hmm. so she could get sleepy.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to bed in my bedroom, which is right next to it, and I left the door wide open.
Right.
So the light from her reading lamp was falling on from my torso up to my head as I lay on the bed. So there was light in the room. As soon as my head hit the pillow, I might preface this by saying I have insomnia, so it takes me at least an hour to go to sleep, but so it's not like I went to sleep here and had a dream.
Okay.
As soon as my head hit the pillow, my eyes were still open, and I was looking straight up. And off to my right, I saw, I guess I've got to say, it's kind of a semi-manifested head of a gray alien standing by the side of my bed. I could see his neck, and I could see one part of his shoulder, part of one shoulder. And it didn't appear he had any clothes on. It was just like a bare shoulder with a skinny neck and a head at semi-profile. And I thought, what? I mean, I was amazed. So my eyes widened, and I blinked a few times to see if it was still there, and it was still there. And but it was only semi-manifested, and I don't know what that means.
Well, you have to go back and think about how does a handprint appear on the computer when you're there working on it, possibly.
Exactly. They're operating at some other level. That,
a different vibrational frequency. You don't see
thank
them.
Thank you, yeah. So I see this, and then in the middle of the... In the air, in the middle of the bedroom, I see a jet black sphere about the size of a basketball, maybe a little smaller, and it's just floating in, it's like flat, it's not like a sphere actually, it's like a circle, it's a flat jet black circle.
Uh-huh.
And this little, and that circle stays, that black circle stayed there the whole time that this event transpired. The next thing the little alien did is he disappeared and reappeared at the foot of my bed, and I had a futon, so I'm down quite low. And so he appears at the foot of my bed, and then starts moving towards me, you know, up from my feet, up over my body. But as he's doing that, he's not. There's no body there. It's just a head. It's a head of a gray alien.
Okay, now you're on your back.
Yeah.
Your eyes are open. Question one, are you able to move? Or are you just not bothering to move, not wanting to move? Did you have any paralysis?
I was getting to that, and since you brought it up, after the incident was over, I didn't move throughout the whole experience. And I don't know if I was paralyzed because it never occurred to me to move or to bolt out of bed or anything. I don't know why I didn't react by bolting out of bed, but instead I was just in a hyper-vigilant state where I was observing every little detail of what was transpiring.
The head is moving toward you, kind of like a disembodied pumpkin head or something. But it's
exactly,
it's an alien head. It's coming toward you. That would make the light from the living room behind it, correct?
Well, the light from the living room would have been hitting its left side of its head.
Okay, all right.
And so as it moves towards me, it gets to within a foot of my face and stops.
Can you see firm matter with the light on it, or is it still translucent? Go ahead.
No, this is quite manifested now. It's completely manifested, but it's only a head. And it stops a foot away from me, approximately 18 inches, maybe. It's maybe a foot above me too, and it tilts its head down towards me, and its eyes were like enormous. I mean, as big as they could possibly get on that face. And it just stood there. It just stared at me. And at that moment, I felt a moment of panic. I thought to myself, this might not be a good thing. And as I thought that, my next instinct was to say a prayer for protection. So I said a silent prayer inside my head. And as I did that, as soon as I finished the prayer, the head moved right up and touched its forehead to my forehead. And that's when I could feel it. I could actually feel the substance of whatever it was made out of touch my head. And then it backed away, went really rapidly towards the foot of the bed, zipped across the room to that black thing that was in the air, and disappeared within that black hole.
Wow.
Yeah,
this is not like something you would want to talk about at a cocktail party.
No, actually, I've told, you know, the only person I've told this whole thing to is my brother. I've tried to discuss it with my small little circle of people over the years, and I learned very quickly just to keep it to myself, you know.
I'm very grateful and appreciative that you're sharing this. I think it's wonderful.
Well, thank you so much.
Your description is extraordinary and paints very impressive pictures in my mind, and I'm sure the people listening are the same way. Brett, when you heard this story from Mark, what were your thoughts? What did you tell him? You remember? How did you interpret it?
I don't really know how I responded to that story, but the previous experience that he had with where he got knocked out, I remember responding to that situation, and I was very concerned for my brother, and I'd never You know, I mean, I'd read Communion at some point. I'm not sure. But anyway, you know, I was just concerned that, you know, these beings just, like, they don't ask. They just come into your house. They come through the walls. Right. They do what they want to do.
That's right.
I was worried about Mark. And one thing he didn't mention with that story was that he reported that knockout sighting that he had. I think that's the only report he ever made to a UFO reporting center. Mark can tell that story better than me. But what I do remember is that shortly after he did that, he was visited by, you know, basically, you know, the men in black. Mark, you want to tell that story?
Yeah, let's hold on, gentlemen. I have to take another little pause here. We'll come back and let's hear that. This is going to be a remarkable book, obviously.
Thank you. I'm hoping so. Writing it.
These are very unique. All right, stand by. We'll be right back. Okay, here we are back. All right, this is fascinating. We're with Brett and Mark, and Mark has an aftermath to that amazing story. Now, let me ask you another question.
Yes.
It's midnight. Who knows what time it is when this happened? 12:30? We don't know. So the face came up and touched. We're going to go back to the parking lot. We'll get there. The face came up and touched your forehead. What do they call that in Star Trek? Mind meld? I don't know. Did you, when that happened?
Like the Vulcan, mind meld or something.
When that happened, did you recall anything unusual mentally?
Yes. Well, I recalled a physical sensation.
What was it? What was it?
Well, as his head touched mine, I felt something move from the center of my forehead just above the bridge of the nose. Just up there.
Yeah.
Where the third eye area kind of is. But I felt something move from there to the left above my eyebrow, about a half inch above my eyebrow. And it felt like something moved inside my head.
Implant.
Very, very rapidly. And it felt big, like something the width of a pencil beneath your flesh moving across from the center of the forehead to the side of the forehead. I'm sure it wasn't anything that big, but it felt
big. Understood. Well, of course it would feel that big. Have you had a CAT scan of your head?
No, I haven't. Although that may be coming up soon, because I get an unusual amount of headaches
all right.
The same spot.
When you get the CAT scan, don't even think about having this thing taken out. Leave it alone. Don't even bring it up to the doctor. I would just say, say anything about headaches here. Let him. I'm just giving you off the cuff my feelings. Don't make a big deal out of it. Let him say, well, there's something here. We don't know what that is. That could be a tumor. We know it's not a tumor. Forget that.
I think you're right. Yeah. Just see what happens.
Yeah. But you, I would get those CAT scans and keep them. They might even want to go on the book.
Depending on what the result might be.
Right.
I have no idea. Here's another thing. When that sensation happened, I had the intuition that something was being removed rather than being put in. Mm-hmm. And that's just an intuition I had. And, and I don't know if that's correct or not. It's like you can't believe everything you think or feel. But
No, it could be. A lot of these things are not like a piece of metal, like a metal construct with microcircuits in it, chips. It could be a biological chip, biological implant that actually can possibly be pulled right through the skin with the right energetics. I don't know. I'm out here.
Exactly. I'm thinking, too, if they can come right through the wall or right through the room,
yes, of course.
They can put something in and out of your head probably in the same fashion. You know?
Of course. It's got to be considered as a possibility. Agreed.
Well, before we get to the, or go back to the Men in Black thing, I wanted to, just for your listeners, I wanted to finish my description of the gray head that was that
yeah.
touched his forehead.
Let me also say, Brett, we're not giving you as much time as I wanted, so I'd like to invite both of you to come back in a couple of weeks on the 14th, maybe. And we'll, because Brett has a lot to say, and he's been very.
Yes, we both do.
Very gentlemanly, and thank you, Brett. So I want to get your story here,
pleasure.
Too.
I wanted Mark to get his story out to people because he's got a lot to say, and I've had a crack at it, so this is great. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
Well, I just wanted to say that the skin color of this head that was coming over my bed was a blue-gray color.
Mm-hmm.
The eyes were enormous and black, and the light from the room, from Mom's reading lamp in the other room, hit the edge of one of its eyes, and you could see the light reflecting off that black eye. And you could see by the reflection, it was kind of a dull reflection, which gave the impression that the eyes weren't wet. They were dry, you know, like a possibly a lens or something. But
I was going to suggest a lens. I've heard this suggested before as well.
Yeah, and it didn't appear that it was wet with tears or you know, tear substance.
Boy, what I would not give to have an experience like that. I really mean it. I'm envious. That is phenomenal, what you're describing.
Well, I'm extremely grateful. There's been moments of concern, but overall I'm very grateful to have had the experiences. And I'm also happy that I was able to have the experience without panicking and actually...
The
experience was really wondrous. It wasn't frightening. There was, like I say, a moment of concern, but that passed, and afterwards, it doesn't seem like any harm came to me from any of my experiences. So,
I don't think so. I'm not hearing anything
like that. Yeah, I'm grateful none that I can tell, anyway. And I know my brother was more concerned for me than I was.
That's what brothers are for.
I know, and if it happened with him, I would have been more concerned for him probably than he would be, you know,
right.
for himself.
All right, well, the idea of another consciousness doing this, interacting with you like that is so phenomenal. This is, I get images in my mind.
It's amazing.
But, yeah.
The one thing that I would wish for... would be some kind of communication, and I have had small communications, not during these experiences, but this being, I could feel the power of its mind, I think, but I couldn't read the being at all. I couldn't tell anything about it. I had no instincts or intuition.
Well, you probably weren't supposed to, but that doesn't preclude interaction going on at a very deep subconscious level that you are not able to access.
Yes, I believe that is probably the case, you know.
Wow. Well, they're not there just wasting time. There was a reason that he or it was there.
For some reason, and a reason which I don't know to this day, but I know that there was something probably.
All right. Well, all part of the book that's coming out, stop writing those screenplays, those lurid screenplays. And finish that book. All right. Now, let's go back to the parking lot event, which is amazing. And you had some visitors. What's the deal?
Well, yes. Now, this was after the parking lot event. Maybe, again, I'm very bad with time, but sometime after, it could be weeks, it could be a couple months after that incident.
Right.
Like I said, in those days, I stayed up late. Actually, I stayed up all night and slept during the day. That was my lifestyle at the time. But one night, I think it was, it was either 12 o'clock midnight or it was 1 o'clock in the morning. And I had the TV on and I was going to watch the old Western TV show called Branded with Chuck Connors.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that one?
Okay, well, that came after The Rifleman.
Yes, that's right. After The Rifleman, and Branded was an hour show, where The Rifleman was a half hour show. And
that's funny.
So,
he used to play baseball for, I think, the Dodgers.
That's right. He was kind of an athlete. I think he also played basketball, but I'm not sure about that.
Wouldn't be surprised. All right. Anyway, trivia time. Go ahead.
Yeah, I like trivia. But anyway, so I had the TV on, and the, I'm not quite sure how this goes, but I think the show started, and the music of the show, I don't know if you remember the music score, but it had a, the show's music started.
Right.
And right at that point, the next thing I remember is I woke up. I don't remember waking up. I just remember being awake, and the show was over. So there's like an hour there.
Right.
That, and like I said, I never fall asleep. I mean, it takes me forever to fall asleep. I can't fall asleep watching a TV show. It's impossible.
Got it.
Yeah, so I started to watch the show, and then the show was over. And so anyway, the next day or so, also, by the way, before the show started, I was looking at my, playing back my UFO footage, some of my UFO footage in my Hi8 camera. I was looking at the monitor screen, and so I had the camera right next to me where I sat to watch TV. So anyway, the show starts. I don't remember anything until the show's over. When I play back the videotape the next day, there's somebody walking around in my room with, again, hard dress shoes on my linoleum floor. I don't know. I didn't have visitors. I was quite a hermit, so I didn't have any company at all. Mm-hmm. And I don't own dress shoes, but somebody's walking around with the camera in their hand, because you can see the camera's on and it's filming the floor and filming the drapes and the windows. And this guy's walking around with hard dress shoes. Well, that's basically it. You know, it's like there was somebody in my room walking around with the camera, and apparently I missed an hour. I'm missing an hour of time. So it's like, I don't know what to make of that other than,
right,
and I don't know how anybody could have got in the apartment. It's like a 6-floor
right.
apartment with a deadbolt on the door.
So just again, you're in the chair, you lose an hour, the camera,
yeah.
someone's picked the camera up and is walking around
with it. Walking around the room.
What are they looking at with the camera? Do they appear to know how to point the thing and aim and capture images?
No,
that they're
don't.
Looking...
It seems like it's just moving around.
Ah.
It shows the window. It shows the floor. And then the camera turns on and off a few times. It goes on and then off. And then
uh-huh.
you keep hearing this person walking with a slow gait with hard dress shoes hitting the linoleum floor. And
yeah.
it's just... I mean, that's probably the freakiest experience that I had.
That's a freaky one, yeah.
Yeah. And again, what makes me wonder is if it was some kind of man in black or something that was interested in my UFO footage, because he was obviously interested in the camera, which had UFO footage in it. He didn't erase anything or take the tape. He left evidence of his presence there, which is very weird. You know, it's like, why would somebody act that covertly and then leave evidence that they had been there? You know, it's just weird.
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't figure that one out.
I don't know. Okay. You've got this video too, obviously saved at Hi8. It's good
yeah.
quality. The camera.
Yeah.
How much footage was exposed, well, recorded during that hiatus when you were gone? Was it like 30 minutes on the camera or just a couple minutes? Do you know?
No, it was like, it was, gosh, maybe 30 seconds. It's like he had the camera on for maybe 30 seconds, walked around the room with it, turned it on and off a couple times, you know, turned it back off and then
mm-hmm.
and left.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's the one that had to have turned the camera on, because when I was starting to watch the TV show,
right.
I had turned my camera off and set it on the end table next
why,
to me.
Why did you have the camera? You were just reviewing stuff and you left it there.
Yeah, I was just
okay.
reviewing stuff, and also I like to have the camera within arm's length, because at the time I was having UFO sightings at nighttime too.
Ah.
And I wanted to have my camera, you know, there.
Do you think the camera being picked up and turned off and on a few times was a Again, a calling card?
Well, it certainly was whoever that was letting me know that they were there.
Right.
That they could access my room through locked doors.
Right.
You know, it's like there's... I don't know if it was meant to intimidate, you know, or meant to just, or like you say, just a calling card.
No, if they wanted to hurt you, you'd have gotten some other kind of...
That's right. That's why I don't worry about it too much, because, you know, again, nothing really bad happened.
No, nothing happened bad.
Yeah, it's just very curious and...
Yeah. Anybody else contact you?
No, I haven't had anybody knock on the door or visit me with, you know, telling me not to talk about stuff or... nothing like that.
Wow. Here's a little fun thing for you. Hold on.
Yeah.
See if this makes a memory or two.
All but one man died.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, that's it.
And they say he
won't
Brandon, Michael Howard-Shane.
Brandon, okay.
Yeah, that's it. That's what's on my tape.
That's funny. Well,
yeah.
They opened the gates. They took off all his epaulette designs and badges and broke his sword and said, "Start walking, Chuck."
That's right.
That was the opening. Wow.
Yeah, that's that music is on my tape, and then and again, you know, no recollection of watching the show. It's just the show was just finishing when I apparently was conscious again. And
wow. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Now, when you come back, if you've got time on the 14th, we'll spend more time with Brett and his stories. Anything you want to add to any of this? The parking lot story is amazing. The bedroom encounter with the, we'll call it a floating ET head, and the actual physical touch. I don't know, in 25 years of doing this program, I've ever had anyone describe physically touching or interacting with one of the visitors. I just don't. That's
well, you know something, it's only at this very moment, as you said that I feel that was extraordinary. Like, it's become such a part of my life that I never really thought about it personally as being as extraordinary as maybe it is, you know? It's like, it never occurred to me that
part
maybe...
Of your paradigm.
What's that,
yeah,
Brett?
It's part of my paradigm. So
his paradigm, you know.
Yeah.
That's what happens. Is you have these experiences, it shifts your paradigm, and then that just becomes the new norm after a while.
Yeah, there's. It's kind of like I would be surprised. I would be more surprised if extraordinary things didn't happen to people than if they do happen. I kind of expect things like that to happen because I believe the nature of reality is that wondrous and amazing, and I think these things should be expected, you know.
I think if more people thought that way, they would probably have more experiences, at least that they remember.
I think so. I think you have to reach out and meet the phenomena halfway, and then it kind of reaches towards you.
Well said.
Yeah.
It's always be careful what you wish for, too, so...
Yeah, a little bit of caution is not a bad thing.
Hey Mark, do you want to share? You had one more encounter, a physical encounter with that advanced gray in your bathroom.
Oh, well, we only have 2 minutes, so we might.
Okay, maybe we'll save that for later.
Yeah, let's save that. Save it, and I'm just amazed at this because we've had so many programs over the years with abductees, and they say that they've been taken. I had the Pascagoula story on not too terribly long ago. He was taken. But nothing like the touch, the sensation, the inner reaction that you described. Nothing. Some of them say that they felt that they were being taken by the arm or the hand, but nothing,
yes.
nothing like what I just heard. Nothing like that.
Yeah.
And you have not shared these with many people, have you?
Really, probably the whole story. My brother has been my sole confidant, and for me, and likewise, he tells me everything that he experiences, and because we both kind of get what we're talking about, you know. But in my little circle of people, I've had nothing but bad reactions, so I just sort of don't.
No, you're wise. You're wise.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and I'm okay with that. As long as I have one person to share with, I'm happy.
That's all it takes. One open mind that cares.
Yeah, and sharing on your show is wonderful because I know your audience is, you know, up on a lot of this stuff.
They are completely open minded, and they're listening as intently as I am.
Yeah, so that's a wonderful thing because and likewise with the book, I know the right people will read the book, and people not interested won't read the book, so it reaches the right people.
Well, your philosophy is really perfect. Exactly right. That's what will happen. I do hope you'll be able to think about the disc idea. I think that that would be a knockout.
Yeah.
To do that.
I think that's a good suggestion. I never really even thought about it, but that's
All right.
Interesting.
Okay. Well, what we'll do is look forward to the 14th, have you both back on again, and pick up the story
of
the gray in the bathroom, and then we'll listen to Brett. I think it's fairly obvious that it's a fair assumption to make that you both are involved with something of long-term duration, of possibly profoundly, we use the word... intimate in terms of communication. Something's going on here. There's no doubt.
Next time I have a story of... I've had very little direct communication, but I have had a couple experiences where there was communication, and very minimally, but it's still interesting, I think.
Oh, I'm sure it will be. All right, we look forward to that. Mark, thank you very much. Just really
thank
well
you,
done.
Jeff.
Well done. Oh,
thank
yes.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Brett, great to talk to you again. And we will do
Absolutely.
So
Thank you
on
so
the
14th. Much, Jeff.
You bet.
Good
All right,
night.
Gentlemen.
Good night to your listeners.
Okay. Good night to both of you.
Yes. Good night, everyone. Good night, Joe.
Well, now that's fascinating. Do you hear in people's voices their truths? Yes, you do. Loud and clear. Okay. Back with more in just a few minutes.